Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators in action tonight. Puck drop late at 8:15. But joining us now is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, it's been quite the 24 hours here in Nashville. Kevin Byard traded away to the Philadelphia Eagles for a fifth and a sixth round pick and a player. What did you make of this move, and what do you think this says about the Titans and their intentions for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I was surprised by it, for sure. In fact, I saw him, and I was like, you know, you get those kind of parody accounts, you know, on social media. And I was like, hold up, let me make sure that I'm not getting duped here. I mean, that's honestly how I felt about it. In terms of what it means for the direction of this year and for the team in general, I feel like, and I think you asked me about it last week, in terms of, you know, when is it time, like prior to the trade deadline, where you maybe just make some decisions on the season. It certainly feels like it is definitely a move that is more about looking into the future than about being good right now. And so I think it, from that perspective, it's not good for the 2023 season for the Titans. And then I think just conversely, because I also think it's important for everything that Kevin Byard has probably meant to the Titans, I think he's going to be loved in Philadelphia. I think he finds himself in a really good situation on a very good team. And I think going there is going to probably raise his profile a little bit. And I think he's going to end up enjoying, you know, a lot of team success.
Yeah, Kevin Byard is such a good person. And so that's kind of the silver lining for me with this move, is this is his opportunity to win a Super Bowl. And I think that he deserves that. But as far as the Titans are concerned, do you think that this move is an indication of more to come, more trades to come for the Titans?
Yeah, I think possibly. You know, and it's, you know, it's unlikely that you – you know, you're trading your whole roster away or anything like that. But, yeah, I think that it's a move that, you know, anybody that could potentially be out there. And look, you know, somebody else has to want them too, right? Like that's and want their contract and when their contract expires. And, you know, so there's got to be a need on a team, and the players' age, injury history, contract, all that has to fit. But, yeah, I don't think there's any question that it raises eyebrows and it makes you feel like there are, you know, it could happen to nearly anybody.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, yes, it can happen to anybody, especially when you have a team like the Titans where, you know, draft capital is low. The team doesn't have a, you know, the roster's not loaded. They're still trying to build this roster back up. Can you see the next potential guy, and I think they would be doing him a favor, is D-Hop, you know, trying to get something for him, but also trying to help him as they did Kevin Byard?
Yeah, the question is, and this is where it goes back to, is like, all right, who needs him? Where's the fit? Mm-hmm. And what would they want to do? You know, the interest for D-Hop seemed to be New England or Tennessee. And so as you look at New England, you know, like, is that still a fit? It might be, but just doesn't feel like a very New England move, to, especially with where they are and how their season is going. So that's where it goes back to, like, somebody's got to want the player and everything else that comes along with it. Again, age, injury history, financial obligation, all of that. So, like, could somebody be interested in him? Sure. But at the same time, like, let's go back to when he just was completely available. What was the true interest?
Yeah, you're right. But now I'm looking at a team like Kansas City who just lost, maybe losing Justin Ross.
Yep.
You know, he got arrested last night. And, you know, you never know what's going to come out of that in regards to suspension. So I was looking at a team that already had a little interest in D-Hop, and now that they don't have to pay the full salary, can you see a team like the Kansas City Chiefs inquiring really about D-Hop?
Yeah, well, like that's a good point on the, you know, the situation with Justin Ross. They weren't getting a ton out of him anyway. Justin Watson, who had, you know, kind of been coming on for them, he hurt his elbow. Kadarius Toney is at a really hard time staying healthy, which is honestly why they got back, you know, with Mecole Hardman. And so, I'm sure it would be discussed by a team like Kansas City. Like, that would make more sense to me than New England, especially since, you know, part of what I think does happen as well is, look, just like the season hasn't gone exactly the way the Titans would have wanted it to go, look, I think you can say the same thing for other teams, New England being one of them, although they're coming off a big win. And so, you know, with that, like, part of what happens is, are you willing to make a move if your season's not going great? Whereas Kansas City makes a little bit more sense because, look, they still have everything in front of them in terms of what they're trying to achieve.
Now I'm going to venture off a little bit because I know Willie's going to jump back on in regards to Titans talk. But this weekend, I mean, we saw some egregious penalties. And whether it be in NFL or college football, I even said it goes down to high school. The officiating hasn't been as good. It's been glaring mistakes. And I look back to the Buffalo game the Cleveland and Indy and Cleveland game. That was Tim. I mean, I know you're a quarterback, and you're like, listen, no, it was a pass interference. But Tim, that wasn't a pass interference. I don't know what's a pass interference now and what's not in today's NFL.
Well, I mean, listen, so take that play for sure. And honestly, it happened so, like, when it happened, I'm not sure the quarterback, PJ Walker, like, I'm not sure that he wasn't already down. Like, if you look at the whole play, like, because he was under pressure early, and then just, like, go to the Sunday night game and, you know, Miami and Philadelphia, and there's a receiver trying to run a comeback or a back shoulder fade, and, you know, his face mask gets grabbed and pulled down when the ball is in the air traveling to him. So, yeah, like, I think, like, and I feel like we talk about this every year, and everyone wants to get the calls right. And I think some weeks, because of the games they happen in, feel like they are, you know, there are more missed calls or bigger missed calls than some other weeks. We're definitely coming off of a week where that definitely felt like it was the case.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, I can't imagine a week of the situation the Titans are in and the quarterback situation is not center stage. But that's really – and I do wonder their knowledge, their inner knowledge of how long Tannehill is from being 100% healthy factored into the decision to start looking down the road of trading guys like Byard and maybe some others. But were you surprised? Mike Vrabel in the press conference said that if Tannehill cannot go, that both of the other quarterbacks will play. Did that surprise you? Or is that just maybe him being coy of not wanting to give away what he will try to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that. I actually got disconnected, so I missed some of that. But I think talk about the situation and being coy about it. Yeah, I think, listen, some of it may not be, maybe you don't really know about, you know, the health and situation. Some of it might be, you know, everything about it. And, you know, you're trying to play it close to the vest because it probably does matter in terms of, you know, like, is he playing and not going to be mobile? Is he not playing at all? Is he, you know, are we going to do something with the other two quarterbacks? And so, listen, while, you know, ultimately the information probably comes out, I think as long as you can push that information in terms of revealing it out, I think it just makes it harder for people to actually practice and put a plan together to deal with what you think you're going to be facing.
The preparation to me is interesting. We've talked to you so many times about how you try to improve quarterbacks behind the scenes when they are not getting the main reps. They're basically running the scout team. They're in the meeting rooms, things like that. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to see it on display. So we'll just go off of what we've seen from Malik Willis. Knowing what you've seen from Willis and the unknown factor of Levis, how would you lean on how you would want to go about it here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, based on how things have gone, like in going back through the preseason and then also seeing the growth that we've talked about this, you know, Malik Willis's growth for sure has been significant. And so I think that, you know, what I would do is I would invest heavily in trying to do what I could to get him to continue to improve and play better. I mean, that is, you know, that is exactly what my plan would be and what I would do. Now, you know, at the same time, because of the nature of how he plays and all that stuff, like, look, you have to also be prepared. And so, look, I don't know how the reps exactly would go, but, listen, it's probably 80-20, you know, 70-30 at best in terms of, you know, percentages, you know, in terms of, you know, the two young quarterbacks. And then in terms of the plan, look, the plan might be a little bit different depending on, you know, who's going. But what I would do is I would cater it to the guy that I'm planning on playing. And so with that being the case, you know, maybe there's some more move the pocket stuff. There's more concepts that Willis is comfortable with. And, you know, I think that, you know, you basically pour everything you can into trying to get him to play well, which doesn't help the backup, but that's just kind of how it goes.
One of the things that I was picking up on during that press conference was the difficulty that a person in Mike Vrabel's position has in he's the coach, but he's also involved pretty heavily in the personnel decisions with Rand Carthon. So he's got to look short term. He's in the trenches, but he's also looking at the big picture. That just seems to me that's why I think the traditional model evolved the way it did, right? Even though you see it differently, but this is going to be very challenging, I would think, over the next 10 days as he's aware of maybe what the market is for some of his players, and he's also trying to sell his team. Don't give up on the season here. We're still trying to win.
Well, especially, you know, there are times when, you know, a move gets made where it feels like it's not a move that is helping you win that season. You know, as a coach, you can kind of come in and be like, hey, you know, us against them, right? Like, we're still all in here, you know, rowing the boat together. And, you know, when everybody knows that, you know, you, if not are part of those decisions, but are the ones making those decisions, you kind of be like, hey, wait a minute here. Like, this doesn't feel like, you know, you can be speaking out of both sides of your mouth. And look, and that's why I think the pressure is going to end up on him based on, you know, look, the move from John Robinson clearly put all the pressure on Mike Vrabel, and with that become some of the unique challenges that you have to deal with.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, we were talking about, you know, the effects in the locker room. And, like, D-Mace was talking about it. He's been there, and they've said, hey, we're pissed off, but we still have a job to do. That's something that Mike Vrabel said as well. We understand, I understand, and everyone in this locker room understands that we have a job to do. What kind of effect do you think it has in the locker room when you trade away a guy like Kevin Byard, who has been, who I like to call, you know, the Titans way personified?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think that it always cuts both ways, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's there's disappointment, especially for somebody that's looked up to, somebody that is respected, somebody that was a leader, somebody that has given a lot and done it the right way. So when it happens, like, there's this disappointment for sure, that it's like, man, like, how is that happening? And then at the same time, you know, there's also this, like, hey, it puts you on alert. Like, hey, if it can happen to him, you know, it can happen to anybody. And so then there's this attention grabbing, you know, aspect of it that can help or hurt you. And then there's just like the personal side of it, right? That, you know, I think we oftentimes just ignore because guys get cut all the time, guys get traded. You know, there's free agency, there's so much movement that, you know, all that's true. But then there's this, like, personal side of it that I know with, especially if you spent a long time somewhere, which Kevin certainly had, there are deep relationships between players and coaches, and guys have been through a lot, both personally and professionally. And so when those things happen, like, it hurts. And there's, you know, there's an emotion to that that you kind of end up having to work through, and I think that's the most difficult part of it.
Yeah, you're right, Tim. So, I mean, and with this locker room and, you know, them moving forward, you know, we had a discussion whether this team is better off. How are they now that Kevin Byard's not there? You know, my thing was this team was a middle-of-the-road team with Kevin Byard. I think they are, you know, a middle-of-the-road team without him. You know, I can't see them, you know, going from where they are to the Chicago Bears. That's just me. And the Chicago Bears, to me, even though they got a win this weekend, they are the bottom of the barrel when you're talking about teams in the NFL this season.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the thing. I think they did not improve as a team for this season. You know, people can say what they want about Kevin's age and, you know, is he the player that he once was. I mean, he played nearly every special team, you know, last year. He, you know, what he's lost in speed, he certainly makes up for in leadership and knowledge and all of that stuff. And so I think that they did not get better for this season. They were already kind of trending towards being a bottom half team. And I think the move on this, you know, I think will start to create a buzz of being in, you know, for a team that's drafted a quarterback relatively high the past two seasons because of the volume of really talented quarterbacks that'll be coming out in next year's draft. Like, it puts them squarely in that conversation. And so I think that in terms of how this year goes, you know, there's going to have to be, you know, people that kind of are able to block out the noise and, you know, play in a way that and lead in a way that, you know, maybe they haven't done throughout their career because, you know, if we get to the halfway point and the record is not great and it looks like things are going a certain way, there's going to be talk about, are you even trying to win football games? I mean, that's just that is the track that it feels like the team is on right now.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Tim, because just to get a sense of the vibe of the fan base right now, we've already had Caleb Williams discussions. So my question for you, is Caleb Williams the kind of franchise-altering quarterback that we saw Trevor Lawrence or Joe Burrow be with the first overall pick?
Yeah, I don't know if he is. I'll tell you this, and I'm on record as saying this, is I think Drake May is the best quarterback that's going to be coming out in this year's draft. I mean, it's funny saying it, coming off a really bad, you know, loss for North Carolina last week against Virginia, but I think he's nearly a perfect prospect at quarterback. I think he's, like people, the way people talked about Andrew Luck, I think people will talk about Drake May that way. I think Drake May is, he's going to be a better pro than he's a college player. And so whether it's May or whether it's Williams or whether it's, you know, Bo Nix or Quinn Ewers, or there's going to be a lot of really talented players that are in the draft. I think May is the first guy, but because I think that happens, you know, the list of other guys that will go in the first round, I think will be significant this season. And teams like the Titans, maybe the New England Patriots, others, that maybe at the beginning of the year you didn't think they would be drafting the quarterback in the first round, that are, I think, may end up surprising us come April.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you as always. Thanks for stopping by. We'll chat next week.
Great. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. All right, we will react to what Tim had to say there, plus back into Kevin Byard talk, because Mike Vrabel touched on what may have motivated this move. And I don't know if I totally 100% believe Mike Vrabel with what he said. So we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
said the record didn't have a bearing on the move. So
that, right, that so I wasn't talking in a hypothetical situation. We're not 5-1, we're 2-4. So, you know, we got to find a way to win a game. Like, that's what it is.
So what does your quarterback situation look like now?
Well, Ryan won't practice today. And, you know, we'll see where he is at the end of the week. And I would imagine that...
There was Mike Vrabel. Two parts there. I want to get into what he has said first. Said, you know, being 2-4 had no bearing. And Paul Kaharski gave the hypothetical, said, well, if you're 5-1 and Byard had 3 interceptions on the season, are you going to trade him? And Vrabel said, I'm not getting into hypotheticals.
That's a Jeff Fisher line, by the way.
I mean, do
he used to use that all the time. I'm not dealing in hypotheticals.
Which is probably a cop-out answer, because I think the answer is, of course you wouldn't.
Right.
Of course you would not trade away Kevin Byard if you were 5-1, had everything to play for, first place in the division, and he had 3 interceptions. It's silly to think that the record has no bearing on the decisions that you're making at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't think that was probably the best way to answer that question, but it illustrates what I was asking Tim. And Tim made a good point. It's hard to be in the bunker with your guys and also be on the outside of the bunker saying we got to make the right decision even if the guys in the bunker are going to suffer, right? Like the guy in the bunker, the coach, is dealing with – like I think of Band of Brothers. Like pick your favorite movie with that kind of genre, right? Mm-hmm. There's the general way out saying, hey, we got our guys, man, the 101st. They got to go after it. These are our guys. They're out in the snow for a month.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who gets the order from above is like, I got to go back and tell my guys. But I'm in the bunker with them, man.
Right.
I'm there. But
Like longest yard.
Yeah. Like John Hines last year could be in the bunker, and they could almost use it as a rallying point. Hey, they don't believe in us. We got to do our thing. Let's rally. It's hard for Mike Vrabel to play both hats, right? He's in the bunker, but he's also – the players know that he's also the guy saying, hey, we got to maybe play for the future here.
Well, we know he's in a bunker, and we assume he's also the general making the call, too. I'm making the call, and I'm also in a bunker. But, I mean, how did you – because I try to think about these situations as if, you know, okay, I'm looking at this team. If I'm in that situation, how would I answer that question? He answered it perfectly, because if he doesn't answer it like that – and he answers, well, yeah, if we were 5-1, yeah, it'd be a different story. And then the next question is, well, are you telling your team the season's done? See, you can't just look at the question being that. You can't just look at his answer. You got to look at, okay, if he answered it the way you wanted him to answer, then what would the following question, the follow-up question would have been, so you're telling your team you have no chance.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, he's calculated. He understands what he's doing. He can't. He may want to answer Paul's question, but he know he can't, because the minute he answers Paul's question, the next following questions, plural, is, are you giving up on your team? Are you giving up on your team? So he's like, no, I'm not going to.
I think we know that if they were 5-1, they would not be making.
But he can't. But what I'm saying is, what I know and what I know he can answer are two different things. What I know and how I know he should answer the question is two different things. Yes, we know that if you're 5-1, it'll be a different story.
Right.
But he can't answer it based upon a 5-1.
So
because
you're not. But then, based off of that, you know, the follow-up question would be, so are you giving up on
exactly.
the team? Do you think he's giving up on the team?
I don't think he's giving up on the team. I think they're looking at it from a realistic standpoint. Like, we're still going to try to win. But we got to do something. I don't want people to lose sight of that. This team they don't have much draft capital whatsoever. Blame it on whoever you want to blame it on. They don't have it. They're trying to build it up, because I guarantee you, I see it as if it's happening now. If he didn't make all those trades, this team ends up bad. Everybody's screaming. Even we're screaming. Why didn't you trade guys to get draft capital? You had a chance. Look at this organization. It's a two-bit organization. Nobody knows what's going on. That would have been the questions, or that would have been the remarks. I'm telling you. So right now, this is a team that understands where they're at. They're trying to build up draft capital. They're trying to make this team better for the future. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. Tim even said, like, listen, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
But also they got to think about, you know, moving forward and how can I build this roster back up, not just through free agency, but through the draft. It may take a couple of years, but this will be legitimately his first full offseason for Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel together. I know they were able to do some, but this will be his full, like, I've evaluated the team for the year. I'm going into offseason. Now I get to evaluate the draft for my team. This is going to be critical. This offseason is very critical for both Mike Vrabel and for Rand Carthon. I think more importantly, it's critical for Mike Vrabel.
Yeah.
Because if he don't get this right, this may be his last year. Next year may be his last year.
And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, because I've seen a lot on social media, in the text line, and I'm not saying it's all Titans fans, but I've seen a lot of discussion of, well, great, you know, great move, Ran, or Ran is doing this, Ran's doing that, Ran's giving up on the team. No. Let's not forget who's making a lot of these decisions. I don't think that anybody thought that Rand Carthon was going to get hired and have carte blanche of every single roster decision. This move does not get made without the express written consent of Mike Vrabel. So this is not just on Rand Carthon. This has Mike Vrabel's thumbprints written all over it as well.
I think, too, and we have discussed this backwards and forwards. And first of all, let me say this. I really hope that Rand Carthon is available at some point this week, because this is a trade of this magnitude.
Yeah.
He should probably be answering some questions, too, on his vantage point of all this. But I think, too, it's probably just not those two individuals, but also you have your scouts, you have your assistants, your analytics people. All of them have to be in a room to where you're discussing where are we right now? What does it look like? The way Jacksonville's playing right now, the way Houston is playing right now. The Colts almost won again yesterday with their backup in there, right?
They should have won.
Yeah.
They should have won.
Yeah. And so you're climbing over, you're not just putting yourself against Jacksonville, but it's the rest of the teams in your division, which is not a gimme anymore, and the rest of the AFC. Where do you fit? What's realistic? Where are we going next year? Those are the questions you discuss in those circles and not the bunker, mm-hmm. right? And that's where I think Rand Carthon probably had to do some reality checks, and maybe they had to sell Mike Vrabel on this is the best move that we have to do in the long term.
Do the two of you think that, because obviously, yeah, we want to hear Rand Carthon talk about what's going on, but I don't think he's going to talk until it's over with.
At the end of the trade deadline.
Because there may be other moves that are made. So why do I then? Now, he may say something, but I anticipate him not saying anything until next week, next Tuesday, when the trade deadline. Yeah, when it's done and finished, and then he comes on, because there are probably possibly more moves that he wants to make, and he don't want to have to keep on going back and forth to the podium. Now, Vrabel's going to do it. He's the head coach. He has to be on the podium. But Rand doesn't. I think once it's over with, I think then you will hear from him. I would be surprised. Not to say that he's not going to do it, but I would be surprised if he does get on the air and address this prior to the trade deadline being over.
And I would agree. And I agree because I expect more moves to come down the pipe. No, of course, you need a trade partner.
Yeah.
Of course, it needs to be worth your while. That's what I've been saying this entire time, that if you get an offer you can't refuse, you got to take it. If you're going to get, you know, a bag of peanuts, then don't do that. But I would be very surprised if the Kevin Byard trade is the only move that you make. Because Cameron Wolf tweeted yesterday, like, Rand Carthon wants younger, fresher. Well, if you want to get younger and fresher, and the only move you make is trading away Kevin Byard for a fifth and a sixth round pick, well, that doesn't really make sense. Of course, I know you need a trade partner. I understand that. But I do believe that the Titans probably are actively trying to get more trade capital back in return. I'd be shocked if Byard was the last move.
I would agree with that. I think you have to search. And I think part of when we discussed, you know, what did they get back for Byard, it is indicative of the market, right? It would be great if you had three teams all calling you and saying, we got to have Byard. They offered you a fifth and the sixth. Well, we're going to offer you a fifth and the sixth and throw in XYZ. You know, but I don't know if that it's got to be a specific team looking for that specific spot. So it's not as easy in football. But I still think there's some guys that might help a team. And you could get something for them. Now, we talked about this. Maybe this will segue us into the quarterback situation. But you are trying to put your quarterbacks in a position to succeed here.
Yeah.
If you're going to go without Tannehill for a stretch. And maybe there's a point where, you know, you just have to keep letting the young guys roll. So a surrounding cast of DeAndre Hopkins and Derrick Henry, for example, that might help be a security blanket for a quarterback you're trying to find out if they can play. So you would weigh that up against what you could get in return. So maybe you're not just taking whatever you could get, right? And that's a fire sale. You take whatever you can get for whoever they're calling you about. It could be a little more calculated, especially on the offensive side of the ball. That's how I would think.
I can't see them from an offensive standpoint. The only guy I would be surprised if they traded Derrick Henry.
I would be too.
I would be truly surprised because I don't think. I mean, trading both Henry and Byard. That would take that emotionally, that would take a lot. So unless they got something, you know, like we said, an offer they can't refuse, then I think Derrick Henry probably stays put for the remainder of the season.
What would that be?
I think you would have to offer at least a third-round pick for Derrick Henry. I don't think you're getting a second. Damn sure ain't getting a first. Because it has nothing to do with Derrick Henry, the person or player. It's just they don't value running backs like that. They barely draft him in the first round. So you think a team's going to give up a second-round pick?
Derrick?
Yeah.
He was a second-round pick.
No, what I'm saying is teams barely draft
Running backs in general. Yes.
But then he was a second-round pick. Do you think teams are then going to give up a second-round pick on an aging running back?
Well, let's also think about what team would it be. It would need to be a contender.
Buffalo.
Right? It would
Buffalo,
need to be.
Baltimore.
But is he?
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Now, that's an interesting one, Baltimore, because they lost.
Minnesota.
They lost their main
running back.
Gus Edwards is good, but you could be.
Be better.
Yeah. You're envisioning, too, the style
of running, the blocking. Do,
You know, we've talked about Derrick Henry's situations. He excels
takes a lot of pressure off of the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They got a really good offensive line.
I've heard a lot of Cowboys.
But, hold on. Can we just stop the Baltimore thing for a second? I cannot handle him in a Baltimore uniform. I can't do that. D-Mace, I had to go through it with you and Steve McNair and Samari Wall. I can't do that again.
The Eagles are bad enough.
I can't do that.
Watching another, you know, foundational Titans player going to the Eagles, and I know you cannot make that blanket statement of, all right, well, the Eagles get A.J. Brown and Kevin Byard, and you get Andre freaking Dillard. It's not transacting. It's two different general managers. I know that. But still, the Philadelphia Eagles fans, their favorite team is the Eagles. Their second favorite team is the Titans. It has to be. How could it not be?
Well, they got they got some good things in return, and, you know, the deal was done. I'm not going to say everybody was in agreement, but I think across the airwaves, I think pretty much we were all like, okay, we don't like it, but we understand it.
I get it.
And you sort of move on. And you know, AJ has turned out to be what we believed he was going to be.
And AJ is different. He's a younger player.
Exactly.
He's got more of his career left.
He's older. He's closer to retirement than not. Well, hell, I can't say that. He can play another 8 years. He can play 16 years. Hell, I got traded after 8, and I played a total of 15. So I can't say he's closer to retirement because he can play another 8 seasons. But it's just different. And, you know, I know people are upset because Philly, what they're able to do, how AJ's doing, and you feel like, oh, man, we just added more pieces to a team so they can win a Super Bowl. Well, I get that, but we're also trying to, you know, accumulate some things so we can be that team eventually that the Eagles are. That teams are going to be wanting to deal with us, you know, as far as trades and giving us good players. That's what Rand wants. I know that's what Vrabel wants. So, you know, it's going to be a long season. I can't tell you whether it's going to be good or bad, but it's going to be a long season from here on out.
Julio, Marcus,
Brett
Kern.
I don't blame Julio Jones.
I could not believe that was him.
I'm not going to even say that was a tight. He was not a tight. He was He was just a guy that wore the uniform.
Hey, he almost caught a touchdown pass in Seattle.
Yeah. Isn't Zach Cunningham playing for the
Zach he Cunningham? Yeah. And Hugo Amadi.
Well, he was almost a Titan, too, because he didn't do anything here.
He didn't do much.
It didn't do much.
I view him as a Commodore.
Yeah, you view him as a Commodore. I view what you call that as an Atlanta Falcon and not a Tennessee Titans, Julio Jones. Julio. The only two guys that I consider Titans are A.J. and Kevin Byard, or Kern. But Kern didn't play. He only had a cup of coffee there, too.
He played in the Super Bowl.
He damn near won the Super Bowl. I mean, happy for him had he won it. But, you know, his thing, he wasn't there long enough, so he don't consider himself an Eagle. Brent Kern does. He was only there for, what, 8 games, 9 games?
Fly, Titans, fly.
Yeah.
So. Let's get into your phones on this coming up next, 615-737-1025. And, hey, make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach week 9 of college football and week 8 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. And Willie D. Mace. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and D-Mace at Teddy's Tavern, located across from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans' Week 8 matchup against the Falcons and give you the latest updates before the game. Our award-winning NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. We're live out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Late puck drop for the Predators tonight at 8:15, but let's get into your phones. Of course, the big news of the week, Kevin Byard traded away from the Tennessee Titans to the Philadelphia Eagles for a 5th and a 6th round pick. Let's get your thoughts on that. Chris is on the line. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing well.
All right. Well, look, I think I've changed my question because you guys have kind of answered some of my questions. First of all, I do have two short questions. I want to get off the line as quick as I can, so I'm going to hold you up. My first question is for Mason. What about the Zen Sports thing? Is it really that much better?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make the switch, man.
All right, well, cool. That's okay. That's the first thing I wanted to ask you. I think it'll probably help your sponsors too. Also, my main question is, now we're talking about Henry. Like, okay, so in 2023, Henry will earn a base salary of $10.5 million, while carrying a cap hit of $16,367,647. And a dead cap value of $20.6 million. So what I want to ask you guys, if you can explain this to me, is what is the difference between the base salary, a cap hit, and a dead cap value? I'll hang up and I'll listen, and thank you very much for letting me call. God bless you guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Chris.
What were we talking about earlier today on certain sections of the test you do well? Mike Vrabel was talking about that, right? Certain sections.
I would defer to you, Willie.
His thing was we get one test per week. The question was about Kyle Phillips. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can be doing well in practice, but the real test is on Sundays, right?
And the test is what matters.
If I were to take a test on the inner workings of the NFL salary cap, might do well on a few sections, but
it's a confusing,
little confusing situation. How do they do that?
But to answer his question, so like the $10 million is what Derrick Henry is going to make. That is the check that he is going to earn for the 2024 season. The cap hit, the $16 million, is the total amount of money that Derrick Henry will account for against the cap. So including, you know, dead money or including incentives, because you know you can push money down the line. So whenever they restructured Derrick Henry's contract, what was that, last season, 2 seasons ago?
It may have been two seasons ago.
Hey, never hurts to get a raise. Remember that whole quote?
Exactly. That everybody wants to get a raise. Everybody wants to get a promotion. It's confusing, but basically against the cap, it's $16 million, and the check that Derrick Henry will be receiving is $10 million. But we brought this up about Derrick Henry and you know potential guys that could be on the trade market. When Diana Rossini reported that there had been no interest in Derrick Henry around the league, I breathed a sigh of relief because, one, it's Derrick freaking Henry, and two, we are going to see young quarterbacks this week. That's what Mike Vrabel said. We're going to see both, and I want to get into that, the quarterback situation. We're more than likely going to see Will Levis be the starting quarterback next season. You always say it, D-Mace, a young quarterback's best friend, tight end, and running back.
Yeah, besides the offensive line, but yeah, tight end and running back. Yeah,
of course, that I would like to see. And I know that Derrick Henry is not the Derrick Henry of 2019 and 2020. I fully understand that. But he's still Derrick Henry. And so I think having a security blanket in Derrick Henry is going to be incredibly beneficial to whatever young quarterback is out there. So whatever, yo, Derrick Henry, I think it's worth it. If the number one priority of your organization is bringing along your young quarterback and the development of your young quarterback, I think Derrick Henry helps the development of your young quarterback, and $10 million, worth it.
Yeah, they're not going to, at least I would be surprised, one, that someone would be willing to give more than a fourth-round pick for Derrick Henry. And then, two, I would be surprised, honestly, if they, at this, you know, if they move him, you know, because he's, again, he's on an expiring contract. Those last years are voided years. I think he what has two more years that are voidable years. So it's not gonna, it's not them releasing him at the end of the season. It's not gonna be a big deal in regards to money wise.
Right.
It's not gonna be a big deal for
it's
them.
It's set up for it to hit the have the rubber meet the road.
Exactly, absolutely. So I would be surprised if indeed they, because you still want that sense of, you know. You still want that sense of, okay, we can win.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go and if you get you trade away Derrick Henry, now you're trading away a guy on your offense that, you know, has been a critical part of what you're doing. And without him, that offensive line is not good. I mean, you're basically saying, okay, we can see.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving on. So with him, I don't think they make a move. But with D-Hop, again, I think they make the move. And I think I said this the other day. I think it all depends on how healthy Treylon Burks is.
Mm-hmm.
If he's healthy, this, I believe, and he plays pretty well, if he could go through the whole game against Atlanta, there may be discussions again about trying to get something for D-Hop. Because, again, it's a two-year deal, but it's essentially a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they can get out of it if they need to, because whoever they trade him to, he may only play there for the remainder of the season and end up, you know, signing somewhere else. So getting the money off the books and then sending him somewhere where he can legitimately get into the playoffs and we get something back for him. So that may be the next domino. I wouldn't be surprised about that, but I would be surprised about Derrick Henry. And I don't know if those other guys we talked about are going to get moved. Danico Autry, guys like that. What are they bringing back in value? If you only got a fifth and a sixth for Kevin Byer, what is Danico? Unless a team really needs a rusher, what do you expect to get back?
Rushers
from
are so hard Danico to
Autry?
Find, though. Like,
yeah, they
you,
are.
You never know.
It.
Like, they're you can't always control what the other team thinks of your players, right? And sometimes the opposite's true. You're like, this guy would be great for you. And they're like, no, I'm not really interested. So I don't know. But yeah. I do think you have to shop around and see. You weigh that.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. What's the value of getting anything and what's the value of keeping that player? You weigh that.
Because I think
– Is Autry going to be on the team next year?
I don't think so. Is he on an expiring contract as well? Or do you have one more year after that?
But it does, and I know this probably isn't fair, but I can't help but think if Kevin Byard's the only move that you make, what's the point?
He's on an expiring contract. He's a free agent next year. So
to me, if I am another team and I'm trying to win, Autry is a valuable piece because I can play him inside, I can play him outside. I think you can play him in a four-man front, a three-man. That's the question
to trade for.
How many draft picks do I have? Do I have extra picks that I'm willing to throw one in there? How desperate am I to win right now?
Mm-hmm.
I think these are all questions, and I don't know the fronts of all these different teams. But I would think there maybe there's a couple teams out there that absolutely would be interested for the right price.
We'll continue the conversation, but Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.